Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for the vacationing Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Ian, we begin with the good. And it's good because we get to talk about the lousy Obama record, and who better to tell us about it than Bill Clinton. Hillary Clinton, of course, has been basically running for the Democratic nomination with her fingernails firmly on Obama's hip, and she's basically promising to be an extension of the Obama presidency. But while campaigning in Washington state, Bill Clinton might have been trying to talk about the problems the Republicans have been having over the past 8 years, but instead he said this.
If you don't believe we can all grow together again, if you don't believe we're ever going to grow again, if you believe it's more important to relitigate the past, there may be many reasons that you don't want to support her. But if you believe we can all rise together, if you believe we've finally come to the point where we can put the awful legacy of the last 8 years behind us and the 7 years before that when we were practicing trickle-down economics and no regulation in Washington, which is what caused the crash, then you should vote for her.
Well, the Clinton campaign obviously trying to spin that. The Politico story says Hillary Clinton campaign press secretary Brian Fallon sought to clarify early Tuesday that the former president was referring to Republican obstruction of Obama when he used the term awful, saying, quote, Sanders is the only Democrat in the race who actually attacks the president of the United States. So, Ian, it's just fun to watch the Clintons squirm on this. But every once in a while, somebody who's not that familiar with the truth lurches to it. So it's a good day in that sense.
Well, first, let me say, Greg, I'm just thrilled that we have a good martini. Once. This is exciting. It's not only that Bill comes out and lambastes the sitting president, but he offers an implicit critique of the candidate he's vouching for. I mean, Hillary Clinton was arguably the third most powerful member of the executive branch for 4 years. She claims that on foreign policy, at least, you know, selectively, of course, but she basically claims that John Kerry has finished, all the things that she started. You know, she's taking credit for getting the ball rolling on a lot of things, the Iran deal chief among them. If you want to talk about some horrible legacy in the Obama administration, you've got to peg a lot of that to her. And exactly like you pointed out, she's promised to be more Obama. She's running to the left of him because he's pushed the party left. And so now she's trying to claim his legacy. So she's already said she's going to be harsher on Wall Street regulation. She's going to double down on his tax regime. She's said that she's entirely comfortable with both of his executive amnesties, which together cover 5 million people. And at the Univision debate, she said she wouldn't deport children or anybody without a criminal record. So she's basically, in the course of 5 minutes, said that she would effectively abrogate American immigration laws. So, all the things that people might have reason to be really frustrated about with Obama for the last 8 years, Hillary's responsible for, at least partly responsible, has her fingerprints on a good number of them and has promised to carry out the rest.
Yeah, it's amazing. And remember what she said, I think it was the very first debate. One of the questions was, how would you be different from President Obama? I don't remember what Bernie Sanders said, but I'm sure the words Wall Street were in there somewhere. Hillary Clinton's answer was, I'd be a woman. So there you go with the substantive difference.
So there is that. There is.
What do you make of Bill in this campaign? A lot of people think he's a shell of his former political self. Some say this is proof he was always overrated. And there's, of course, always some who think that deep down he doesn't really want her to win. And maybe that's why he's not putting out the sterling performance on the trail this year. What's your take?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that that latter, and there is something, I don't obviously want to get conspiratorial or not, but he doesn't seem himself. If you've watched him for the last year or so, he seems sluggish, off his game, whatever you want to call it. But I think part of it is that Bill's appeal was always charming on his own behalf. He shares that with Donald Trump. Trump is charming on his own behalf. He can't be charming on someone else's. There's the me there, the ego is so overwhelming that when it's exercised effectively, it's magnetic, but it's, I don't really think that that transfers, that whatever that quality is, I don't think it can be used effectively for other people.
All right, on to the bad martini now. And as just about anyone would guess, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about the horrific terrorist attacks in Belgium today at Brussels. There was a major explosion at an American Airlines ticket counter at the airport there. And then there was at least one explosion at a major subway stop right during rush hour. CNN's Chris Burns offering a gripping tale after speaking with one of the first responders to the carnage today in Belgium that has claimed anywhere from about 26 to 34 lives, depending on which reports you hear.
I talked to the spokesman for the firemen's for the firefighters here in Brussels here this afternoon, and he said he was there. He was down there in the rescue. He was in tears telling me how horrible it was. It was the worst thing he has ever seen. It was a war scene to him. He's been a firefighter for a long time, and he's seen everything.
Chris?
He's seen nothing like this.
Ian, as we record this, we're now finding out that ISIS is claiming responsibility for these horrific and deadly attacks in Brussels. The president scheduled to give a big speech in Cuba this morning, and he did so. He changed the very beginning of it to address what happened in Belgium, and I do mean the very beginning because it wasn't very long. Here's what the president said.
The thoughts and the prayers of the American people are with the people of Belgium, and we stand in solidarity with them in condemning these outrageous attacks against innocent people. We will do whatever is necessary to support our friend and ally, Belgium, in bringing to justice those who are responsible. And this is yet another reminder that the world must unite. We must be together, regardless of nationality or race or faith, in fighting against the scourge of terrorism. We can and we will defeat those who threaten the safety and security of people all around the world.
Do you sometimes get the impression the aides just highlight the country where it happens? They typed in Belgium today, and this is what we got out of it. There didn't seem to be a ton of passion, and it was obviously a lot shorter than most people were expecting.
Yeah, it's like a Mad Lib, you know, just insert the name of latest terrorist strike, and Obama offers up the same banalities. As far as the attack goes, unfortunately, it's sort of a matter of time before something was bound to happen in Brussels. You know, there's a country that's just enormously fragmented by immigration that that sort of before the last decades of immigration was sort of fragile to begin with. I mean, it's deeply fractured now. You had last week that the head of the Paris attacks was captured in Molenbeek, which is one of the basically sort of ghettoized, heavily Muslim area in Brussels. I mean, these are the sort of things that, unfortunately, when a society is deeply fractured, we've come to expect. Paris, you know, is the same way, though maybe not fractured to quite the same extent. It's hard to think, you know, looking at this, that you anticipate down the road that we're likely to see similar things in Berlin, Stockholm, maybe Rome or Athens. I mean, the simple fact is immigration policy, the Schengen agreement, the open borders agreement that the EU has, all of the multicultural sentiment has facilitated these things. Obviously, that doesn't remove any of the fault from the evil men who do these things, but these policies have made it so much more likely. And for Obama, he's in a difficult situation entirely of his own making, because he has to come out and do the, you know, je suis whoever the latest victims are. But the simple fact is he knows that he doesn't want to do anything. He knows that he's not going to do anything. So he does exactly what you saw in Cuba this morning, which is offer banal platitudes about how we need to unite and then try steadily to move along and get the focus back on whatever he wants it to be on, because this is an issue that he simply had no interest in dealing with ever since he came into the White House. And now that he's so close to retirement, he's not going to put anything at risk to try and deal with it now. So unfortunately, it's a grim attack that was a matter of time. And we've come to the point where you can almost write the president's response yourself.
On to the third martini. This is probably both bad and crazy. It was just yesterday we made fun of a CBS radio reporter for saying that the president's trip to Cuba basically erased the last shreds of the Cold War. Ian, it was not a reporter today. It was the president who literally said he came to Cuba to bury the last vestiges of the Cold War because apparently, as we said yesterday, either Cuba's not communist or we don't care about that anymore, and it's looking more and more like the latter. But the president made a couple of points in his speech that he wanted to talk about. He said the future of Cuba belongs to the Cuban people. There might be some Cuban people who disagree with that right now, but it's a good aspirational position to hope that the future of Cuba does, in fact, belong to the Cuban people. The president also talked about some of the things that he thinks are fundamentally strong about the United States, which are not found in Cuba. And this first clip, I don't think we would find too much to disagree with. Here's what he said.
I believe citizens should be free to speak their mind without fear, to organize and to criticize their government and to protest peacefully. And that the rule of law should not include arbitrary detentions of people who exercise those rights. I believe that every person should have the freedom to practice their faith peacefully and publicly. And yes, I believe voters should be able to choose their governments in free and democratic elections. Not everybody agrees with me on this. Not everybody agrees with the American people on this, but I believe those human rights are universal. I believe they are the rights of the American people, the Cuban people, and people around the world.
Ian, as you can tell by the rousing, thunderous applause for those rights that the president says are universal, probably not going to change a lot of minds in the Castro regime, but it's good to put that out there, and it's hopefully if they broadcast the speech live, that got through. But as usual, the president's moral equivalence alarm went off, and here's what he said immediately after that.
Now, there's no secret that our governments disagree on many of these issues. I've had frank conversations with President Castro. For many years, he has pointed out the flaws in the American system: economic inequality, the death penalty, racial discrimination, wars abroad. That's just a sample. He has a much longer list.
So we've got horrific, horrific problems too, Ian. But the good news is that the president is a sign that the American system is salvageable.
But here's what the Cuban people need to understand. I welcome this open debate and dialogue. It's good. It's healthy. I'm not afraid of it. We do have too much money in American politics. But in America, it's still possible for somebody like me, a child who was raised by a single mom, a child of mixed race who did not have a lot of money, to pursue and achieve the highest office in the land. That's what's possible in America.
We got some really big problems, Ian, but I won, so how bad can it really be?
Yeah, I bet the Cuban people are really concerned about Citizens United, considering that most of them don't have money or politics. You know, I mean, this is the most unbelievable thing. We have disagreements with the Cuban government, but we're so glad that Raul Castro is here to be a sounding board for our so that we can figure all these things out. Isn't this just wonderful that we have this opportunity? Oh, this is so perfectly Obama. This is just the perfect first year Wisconsin-Madison poli-sci grad school nonsense that he's trafficked in for the last 7.5 years. And it makes a complete shambles of the first clip that you played on, and the noble things that he talked about. When Castro and Obama did Oppressor, Castro's response to someone who asked about human rights is, well, we believe that education and healthcare are human rights, neither of which is particularly good in Cuba, by the way. That's why Fidel Castro used to go to Spain to get his healthcare. Obama implicitly signed on to that, this idea that the faux human rights that were concocted by progressive intellectuals in the mid-20th century are somehow the equivalent of freedom of speech and freedom of religion, which are at the very heart of the American system. This idea that Cuba and America are just different ways of getting to the same destination is such complete and total nonsense. Cuba is a communist regime. It's rooted in a fictitious view of what it means to be human and how people relate in political society. And it's intrinsically oppressive, as opposed to the American tradition, which is rooted in liberty and equality and is aspirational. So all the bad things in Cuba are baked into the system. The bad things in the American system, attempts were made in the founding to forfend against those. And so all what we're trying to do is always validate in America a system that we believe, at least conservatives believe, is a genuinely good thing. Whereas in Cuba, the system that in place is a genuinely evil thing. Obama's going down there and offering platitudes to the effect that these are just different and equally valid ways for societies to arrange themselves is sophistical and deeply offensive on an intellectual level, but to everyone who believes that the American system is something truly noble and unique, and to all the Cuban people who have been suffering enormously for 50 years.
We're shaking our heads. I can't even imagine what people in Little Havana down in Miami are thinking as they watch the president do this. After all that's happened in their lifetimes, but not a shock anymore. Let's just hope we don't see the same thing play out in Tehran over the next 6 or 7 months.
Exactly.
Again, we always seem to end on the brightest of bright notes. So, Ian, I'm going to say that your use of the word forfend, fantastic there in terms of the use of our founding fathers. It's not one we hear a lot, so excellent usage, and thanks for broadening our vocabulary.
Yeah, and some dictionary points for the day. There you go.
Exactly.
I am the Bill Buckley Fellow, right? So you got to throw in some vocabulary words every once in a while.
Fantastic. Talk to you tomorrow. Thanks.
Sounds good.
Ian Tuttle of National Review, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and please tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.